Blog Talk Radio.
But I know the change gon' come. Oh, yes, it
Tribe of Family Channel proudly honors civil rights activists of the historical Tuvalu Nine on the 58th anniversary of their brave sit-in at Tuvalu College, which sparked a movement eventually leading to desegregating the library system throughout this country. Good afternoon. I am Beverly Black, and I will be moderating this historical show with our guest, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis and Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. of the Tuvalu Nine, and also the host of Voices of Wisdom on Tribe Family Channel. In 1961, nine African American students who were members of the Tuvalu NAACP Youth Council participated in Mississippi's first civil rights read-in at the whites-only Jackson Municipal Public Library. On March 27, 1961, the Tuvalu Nine, four females and five males, entered the segregated main branch of the municipal library in search of source material for a class assignment. When the students took seats and began reading, a library staff member called the police. After refusing orders by the police chief to leave the library, the Tuvalu Nine were arrested. The read-in drew support from students at Jackson and Tuvalu colleges, as well as Millsaps, a predominantly white college in Jackson. The Tuvalu Nine were charged and convicted of breach of peace. Each of them were fined $100 and given a 30-day suspended sentence. Megar Evers, civil rights activist, served as the first field secretary of the NAACP in Mississippi until his assassination in 1963. He was born July 2, 1925, in Decatur, Mississippi. In 1954, he became the first state field secretary of the NAACP in Mississippi. As such, he organized voter registration efforts and economic boycotts and investigated crimes perpetuated against blacks. Evers was assassinated outside of his Mississippi home in 1963. And after years of on-again, off-again legal proceedings, his killer was sent to prison in 1994. In 2017, President Barack Obama designated Evers' home as a national historic landmark. Millions of African Americans struggled for racial equality in the southern United States. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was the leader of the civil rights movement of the 60s, but there were many others who followed his lead and made great sacrifices in the quest for equal rights and freedoms. The conditions were not good for us, a civil rights activist by the name of Hollis Watkins recalls. A change needed to be made. A change for the better needed to come about. Watkins and countless others were known as the movement's foot soldiers. They worked quietly behind the scenes to fight segregation and other injustices African Americans faced. History only remembers a few. And so I think when we look back, we don't sometimes recognize the fullness and the incredible number of people who made progress possible. That is Richard Cohen, an attorney with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Ladies and gentlemen, live on Tribe Family Channel, please help me welcome celebrating the 58th anniversary of the Tuvalu Nine historical sit-in at the Tuvalu College Library, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., leader of the Tuvalu Nine, and Mrs. Geraldine Edwards Hollis, a member of the Tuvalu Nine. Welcome to Tribe Family Channel. Good afternoon, Mr. Jackson and Mrs. Hollis.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be able to be on, and at this time, it gives me so much pleasure to know that it has been 58 years and we are still here, still telling the story, and still celebrating what happened way back when. I'm Geraldine Hollis, and not only am I a part of this speaking, but I have also written my book, Back to Mississippi, and tells a lot about my story. But I'll have more to share. I'm going to let my co-host, Joseph Jackson, tell you a little bit about himself.
Thank you, Ms. Hollis. Also, commemorating this 58th anniversary, after the program ends, I have several DVDs of me and my son attending the Metro Elvis Parade in 2014, and having, first of all, it was really, I think it was, yeah, it was the day before the Metro Elvis Parade was featured. I met Metro's older brother, Charles Evers, in his radio studio. And also had a chance to meet Metro's widow, Merle Evers, and Metro's only daughter, I think her name was Ava. But anyway, after the show, I'm going to play all of those DVDs that was recorded at that time. And I also have the DVD, Southern Justice, The Murder of Metro Evers, as well as the movie titled Metro Evers. So I'm going to really immerse myself in all that Wiley Metro Evers really taught us. I'm just really just proud to be alive, able to bring our history regarding the Tugulu Nine to the public.
Well, we thank you so very much, both of you, for doing what you did, having the courage and bravery to be one of the Tugulu Nine and to be trained by Megger Evers. So I would like to hear from you both as to your first encounter with the legendary civil rights activist, Mr. Megger Evers. And I will start with you, Mr. Joseph Jackson, Jr. What was your first encounter with Megger Evers? And I want our callers to know that I do see your call, and in about 15 minutes, we will open up the phone lines after we get this rife history unfolding from our guests. Mr. Joseph Jackson, Jr., your first encounter with Megger Evers.
My first encounter with Mr. Megger Wiley Evers was when I arrived on the campus of Tugulu Southern Christian College in the fall of 1960. I went there on a ministerial scholarship, and I heard that the featured speaker there in Caldwell Hall, Caldwell Church, I think it was, that he was going to speak there. And I just had really to attend that particular meeting, you know, to meet such a great man. And when he finished talking about his plans regarding the desegregation of schools and voter registration and other issues.
We lost your audio, Mr. Jackson. Hello, Mr. Jackson. All right.
Hello?
We're going to ask, are you there, Mr. Jackson?
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We lost your audio for a minute there. Go ahead.
Oh, so by having, you know, grown up in Memphis, Tennessee, it takes me back to when a Greyhound bus driver had a conversation with my mother in Clarksdale, Mississippi, and he turns around and hits my mother in the face and knocks her to the gravel. I turned my mother over and her face was bloodied. So when I attended that meeting, I knew that Mr. Everest really was speaking on my behalf with regards to what I had experienced in Memphis. And immediately I joined the NAACP Youth Council to participate in whatever civil rights events Mr. Evers had planned.
All right, all right. Now, let me ask you a question before Mrs. Hollis tells us her first encounter. With regards to your dear mother, did she have the opportunity to see the doors that you helped open in your activism?
No, unfortunately, both of my parents were deceased. Well, I would say my father was alive, but I was in California later on. Neither one of my parents, my mother died before my father, but neither one of my parents really knew of the historical civil rights event that I was involved in. But the fact, Ms. Black, but the fact, Ms. Black, is that both of what gives me a really great comfort and pride is both of my parents grew up in the Delta of Mississippi, especially my mother in Belzoni, Mississippi. So for me to find myself in the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum in Jackson, Mississippi, I know they're looking down upon me and smiling.
Amen, amen, and congratulations to the induction. And I just honor your legacy and their legacy because you are the seed that they birthed here, and look at the greatness and the honor that you have bestowed not only upon this great nation, but upon their legacy and your family. So I salute you and all that you have done. And now we will hear from Mrs. Geraldine Hollis. What was your first encounter with Mr. Megar Evers?
Wow, that is such a question. I remember so much, and sometimes it all runs together. I actually remember basically my first encounter before I even met Megar Evers was going to those sessions every Wednesday night where I could hear all of the people talking about things, and Dr. Berensky's forums, and all of the people that came and the interaction that was going on then. For me, frankly, it was after December when we got back from the holidays that I made my main decision to be a part of the group. But that was not too late to get in on all of the training and things that I saw that was being done. And I really pledged myself to be a part of this. I wanted to do this. Growing up in the town that I grew up in, it's a good town, but it's like so many of the other towns there in Mississippi, or was, I would say. And we knew that we didn't have the wherewithal, the things that we needed. And especially for me, I was a reader. I didn't know at the time when I first got there that we were going to go in the library, but I was understanding that there was always a need to make a difference. And being the oldest of my mom and dad's children and the only girl, I knew that I had to fight for things because I had to fight with my brothers to see who won the races. Not that we did duke it out, but we had to challenge ourselves and we had to exert ourselves. And for me, going back to the reading, there just wasn't a lot of space to have reading, but I can remember reading books under the blankets with a flashlight. So when I heard that after the choice of Megger's decision for us to go into the library and thinking about finding books and things that would be something that we would not find in the library down on the other side of town, that I know I needed to be understanding of what I needed. Megger was a wonderful person to me. I didn't see him being over exerting and getting us what to do, what we needed to do. I remember very well that he talked to us in such a way to me when I needed to do some things or had something to do, that he was just not so much persuasive, but he was enabling to enable me to do what I needed to do. And I thought that that was really great. I'm looking over some of these things, and for me, it has been just what that introductory song came about, a long time coming, the Tougaloo Nine. And thinking of today, it makes me pretty much very proud and happy that it's been 58 years since that event. And although I've never really had a lot of patience, I wanted to get things done, Megger showed me a lot of things that I could do. Even after the event, Megger made sure that I did my very first speaking engagement, my very first airplane ride. And so for me to tell about my encounter with Megger, all I can say is that he was a really wonderful man and a wonderful person to help to get us to be where we needed to be. If that will do, I just wanted to share that from that time to now, I've been thinking about this over the years. It's been a long time coming. And I had to ask for patience in so many things that I needed to do because I always wanted to go gung-ho pretty much. And I read this article, and it says, patience is the knowing and the rooted belief that whatever situation or circumstances that is present in the present moment is teaching and guiding us to the right path of our true purpose. And I want to say I bless all beings and experiences in my life with a loving and grateful heart. And that includes, first and foremost, the leadership that Megger gave us. Thank you.
Wow, thank you both so very, very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, you are live on Tribe Family Channels, acknowledging, honoring the Tougaloo Nine on this 58th anniversary with our guest, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., the leader of the Tougaloo Nine, and Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, member of the Tougaloo Nine, both trained by and mentored by Mr. Megger Evers. We are preparing to open up the phone line, and we ask that you, if you would like to get in on the question and answer series here, call 347-539-5285. You can also listen online at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. Tribe Family Channel is a Gumbo for the Soul International family brand. And we are getting ready to open up the phone lines. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll prepare, to have the background sounds turned down as we are recording live. And I'm going to go to this number that's indicating to come online, and that is area code 773. I'm opening up your phone line now. Area code 773. What is your name, and who are we speaking to actually, and what is your question or comment?
My name is Mary Ann Hall Winters. I'm calling from Chicago. I'm in the class of 1965 from Tougaloo. I met Geraldine. I was a freshman in September after those guys had to sit in. I knew six of the nine people who were there, and I didn't know their background at all either, so I was really happy to hear how they both got involved with the civil rights movement. And I personally met Megger Everest through Mr. John Salter Jr., who was a professor at Tougaloo, and I got involved in church visiting, encouraging people to boycott through Megger Everest and Mr. Salter. And I just want to add one other thing, because I don't want to keep up all the time, but I did get a ride home to Meridian with Megger and some other Meridianite students, students from Meridian, Easter Sunday of 1963. He had offered a ride to anybody who lived in Meridian, because he was going there for a speaking engagement. And my parents were happy to see me when I got home, until my dad asked me, how did I get there? And I said, I got a ride with Megger Evers. And he said, Mary Ann, are you crazy? He said, those white people will kill you and Megger and all of you. And he made me go on the Greyhound bus back to Tougaloo that evening. But I loved Megger Evers dearly. And when I got the call that he had been assassinated 4 months later, I thought I was going to die. But again, thank you, Geraldine and Joseph, for your history, because I was not aware of how you guys got involved in it. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.
Wow, wow. Your history is very rife as well. So thank you for sharing, and thank you for calling in. We appreciate you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Please continue holding and listening.
I will.
So, great. Thank you. Now, you heard from someone firsthand that knew of you and what history you attained through your courage and through your activism. I want to ask you both, starting with Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, what do you feel was the pivotal moment when you realized what particular occurrence happened where you knew unequivocally that you would be part of the civil rights movement, aside from Mr. Megger Evers, aside from joining the NAACP, Mr. Jackson, but just by your own experiences, like you have your book, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, and I know about the sidewalks, and just from your own personal account, when it comes to segregation and racism and hatred, what was your firsthand account that you innately realized that you would be involved in civil rights? You first, Mrs. Hollis.
Thank you. One of the most pivotal moments for me, when I was in high school, I was a contortionist, a dancer, and I really was sort of like a helper to the physical education teacher. And she enjoyed my participation so much, she started me off at the seventh grade and coming up to help her to lead the class exercises. And she would go to the University of Texas every summer, and she'd come back with new dances and new activities and things like that. So one year, I was not quite in high school, but I was doing ballet, and I was trying to teach myself ballet with her help. And so Mrs. Haynes, Miss Haynes, she was a miss. Miss Haynes went to the White Dance Studio, downtown Natchez, and she asked if they would teach me, and they would get paid. I wouldn't have to be in there during the same time as the other students, but they would not give me any teaching. She would not reach out to teach me anything, not to come into the studio at all. And I felt so really bad about that because I knew that I needed to learn these things and I wanted to be a dancer. I wanted to do this. So the end of that situation was that Miss Haynes actually pretty much begged her, well, would you please sell us some of the old ballerina slippers, because there was no place that we could buy them in that town. And of course, we didn't know about ordering them or where to order them. But she relentlessly gave me one of the older pairs of the shoes, and they were well worn. But I felt as though, you know, I'm going to accept this, and I'm going to see how they fit, and I'm going to move forward with this. But to me, that was the most blatant segregation that I had experienced, because coming up, we knew that we had to go to certain places. We knew that we could only cross certain streets. We could only go through certain neighborhoods without any problems. So, but this was something that I really wanted to do, and that hurt me very much, and that made me want to learn and do more and to be able to be accepted as a person that could do what I wanted to do if I was capable of doing it. And
wow,
that's just the first
wow.
thing that I remember.
Right,
the
right.
The second thing was they had a library. I love to read, too. And it was down on Pine Street where a filling station eventually became. And there, it was like just a little one room. And there were very limited books. But I really wanted to read, and so that was also in elementary, and which would have been junior high, but at that time I was at the new high school, which included the 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, along with 10th, 11th, and 12th. It was two different wings. And so it was during that time that I enjoyed reading, but because they built the new high school, it was one of the most unique areas of a library, and I can remember that so well because it took up a very large amount of the school building on the north side. Large gymnasium, large auditorium, large cafeteria, very large, and the library was filled with a lot of books, and so my girlfriend and I went through every book that we could, challenge each other. And at that time, they were talking about the United Nations and how all of that was evolving. And so we got together and we started talking about that and trying to figure out who knew the most and what it was all about. So that gave me a big thrust into libraries and using the card catalogs and searching and doing those kinds of things. So that gave me some idea of the fact that I wanted to be able to learn more.
What they had for us
in the town was not adequate. Yes.
And your hunger for learning and researching, you know, was brought to a new height and a new level. And so anytime that light is turned on and you can evoke someone's curiosity to learning, you know, new information and overcoming the adversities that you've overcome through these different doors being opened is nothing short of historic. So thank you so much. I'm going to go to Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., but I just wanted to comment that at the beginning of the show, for those of you that just tuned in, we are live celebrating the 58th anniversary of the historic Tougaloo 9 College Library sit-in with two members of the Tougaloo 9, the leader, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., and Mrs. Geraldine Edwards-Hollis, both trained by Medgar Evers, Mr. Medgar Evers. And we're so honored, pleased, and fortunate to be part of this historic moment. Recalling the song at the beginning, I had to drop down to my knees because, and I was brought to tears just at the very beginning of this show, because the song has a certain way of highlighting the sacrifice that you all have made. So to the members of the Tougaloo 9 who are no longer with us, we hold your legacy and your name and your honor up, and we honor you. We honor this time, and we honor your sacrifice. And I would like for you to call out the names of the Tougaloo 9 that have gone on. Either one of you can do this, and then Mr. Joseph Jackson, please, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., please let us know, like Mrs. Geraldine Hollis just told us, that pivotal moment when you innately knew that you would enter into the civil rights era. But please honor the names of the Tougaloo 9 that are no longer with us before you do.
Yes, actually there is only one. There are 8 of us still alive. That's a blessing. Evelyn Pierce, and her name was changed to Miss, I don't have it right here to read it correctly. But anyway, she was Evelyn Pierce at the time. And
we honor her.
Not only did we lose her, but we gained her family members, because when we had our celebration of the 50th year, the family, all of them, came in to celebrate with us.
Amen, amen, amen. Wonderful, wonderful. Okay. Now, Mr. Joseph Jackson, let me just go through the names here of all of the Tougaloo 9. Joseph Jackson Jr., Albert Lassiter, Alfred Cook, Ethel Sawyer, Geraldine Edwards-Hollis, Evelyn Pierce, Janice Jackson, James Sammy Bradford, and Meredith Anding Jr. We honor you, we honor the Freedom Riders, and we honor Mr. Medgar Evers. Now, Mr. Joseph Jackson, when did you innately know that you would become involved in the civil rights movement?
Well, Ms. Black, I'd like to make one correction. I don't know why when I'm referring to Wadsworth Chapel, the name Caldwell Hall comes to mind. But it was Wadsworth Chapel that I heard Mr. Medgar Wiley ever speak. My life in terms of my involvement in the civil rights movement, I always have to reflect back upon knowing that it was divine intervention. And it all really happened when that Greyhound bus driver struck my mother and knocked her down onto the gravel road, and I turned her over and her face was bloodied. I was 10 or 11 years old in 47 and or 48. And having really become accustomed to the Jim Crow laws in Memphis, going to the back of the bus saying yes, yes ma'am, and no ma'am, and yes sir, and no sir, I just knew that I had to really somehow or another to try to change that system at an early age. But a large part of that came from my mother keeping me in the church. I do not have any siblings at all. And my mother was a singer in the choir, Matthew Baptist Church. And I grew up in the church. But somehow or another, I was always inspired by the leadership of ministers that really were the, I would say, general spokesman of our people. When I became ordained into the Christian church, which is known as the Disciple of Christ, I knew that I had to follow in the footsteps of both of my idols, Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays, who were formerly the president of Morehouse College, but he was a minister and he was a civil rights activist, and then also Dr. Martin Luther King. So when I became ordained, these were my these were the men that inspired me to get involved in doing whatever I could in the civil rights movement. But the reason I mention that is divine intervention, Ms. Black, is because when I changed my denomination from the Baptist Church to the Disciples of Christ Church, I wanted to continue my ministerial education and to follow in the footsteps of Dr. Mays and Dr. King. It just so happened I wrote the Board of Missions regarding the possibility of a ministerial scholarship, and it was granted. And that's how I ended up there on the campus in 1962 at Tougaloo Southern Christian College. So when I attended that rally in Rockworth Chapel, and I heard Mr. Evers speak, I knew that I was going to become a part of the NAACP Youth Council. But Ms. Black, I still don't know. I've even asked Geraldine. But I was 23 years old at the time that I arrived on the campus, and I was married, and I had two young children. My daughter was 2 years old, and my son was about a year and a half old. And all I wanted to do was just to become a part of the youth council. Somehow or another, the council elected me to become the president. And so that really put me into the path of really being involved in the civil rights movement as a leader. And so from that day forward, I've always tried to follow in the footsteps of my mentors, or my idols, Dr. Mays and Dr. King, and was proud of the fact that I was an ordained minister with a major in philosophy and religion. I was proud of being a minister because I knew for the most part I was going to be on the forefront of change for my people, just like Dr. King and Dr. Mays were.
Amazing, amazing. Now, reflecting upon the fact that you two are the host of Voices of Wisdom right here on Tribe Family Channel, you had a very distinguished guest join you earlier this month in honor of the 54th anniversary of the March on Selma, and her name is Dr. Alveda King. She is the daughter of the late slain civil rights activist, Reverend A.D. King, and his wife, Naomi
Barbara King. She is the niece of the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Reflecting on the King family and reflecting on that day when Dr. Alveda King would thank you too for all that you have done for civil rights, how did that make you feel? Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, please go first.
I was really elated. I did not get to know Dr. King prior to that time, except for when I did my research on her. But I found out that she was well connected spiritually, community, and all of those ways. And she did. She made me feel very good, giving us those accolades of for our accomplishments. And although she had been with the march and all of the things that went on with her uncle and even in her ministry of caring about the community and others, she gave us a really good understanding of how she felt about what we had done here or there in Mississippi in 1950 and 1961. I almost said 59. That's the year that I came to Tulu. But yes, it was 1961, and she let us know that, and it was a good feeling to know that she felt that way about us, even though she had much more a knowledge of what was going on in some of the things that she and her family were exposed to.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And it was an honor and a privilege to hear someone from as distinguished in terms of civil rights as the Tugulu Nine. So you both have paved the way, and we stand on your shoulders. And I know I stand on your shoulders because I was born in 1959, and that's when you made it to the Tugulu campus. And to even further show my appreciation and what desegregated libraries meant to me, later in 2005, as I were compiling Gumbo for the Soul publications, it would be the library that would be the backbone and the catalyst as to the foundation that I relied upon in compiling this important work, which also led to this platform. So I want to thank both of you and all whose shoulders we stand on for your courage and your determination and your continued voice as we continue fighting for civil rights. Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. Amen.
Yes.
Mr. Joseph Jackson
yes.
Jr., your reflections
yes.
on Dr. Alveda King.
My reflection upon Dr. Alveda King really was a great honor for me. Just the fact that she was an important guest on Voices of Wisdom program, only because it was as if I was connected to the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as well as her father, Reverend A.D. King. And so that just meant a lot to me to be able to share a conversation with her with regards to the legacy of the contribution that her family has given us with regards to civil rights. And I mentioned to her that I only heard her father, A.D. King, speak on one of my programs, and I thought that in terms of his intellectual capacity speaking, he sounded just like his brother, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So just the idea of speaking to Reverend A.D. King's daughter and with her sharing her experiences and her continued commitment to civil rights, it was really just like me connecting to her father and her uncle. And I really felt that kinship, especially, you know, since she is a minister, you know, a doctor in the ministry. And so, just the idea of me connecting with so many outstanding people as a result of being the co-host of this show, I can only thank you, Mrs. Black, for really having known you in your capacity to be able to be a platform for such a historical period as ours, civil rights movement. So I take my hat off to you also, but just meeting such important people and then listening to the lady on the phone who's a Tougaloo alumni, and then of course inviting me to another exciting show yesterday with Professor Earl Sewell, the show Men of Honor. Really, I can't wait really to appear on another radio program because I'm learning a lot myself.
Wow. Well, as we come to the top of the hour and the end of the program, celebrating you two and all of the Tougaloo Nine, Mr. Medgar Evers, and the foot soldiers, and all of the people during the era that assisted, whose shoulders we stand on in my generation, it is my honor, privilege, and pleasure to host the platform and to have your voices here, and especially to have you and Mrs. Geraldine Hollis as the host of Voices of Wisdom on Tribe Family Channel. And so thank you so very much for all of your sacrifice and your courage. I don't even have the words to say what this means to me. I'm in awe every day of what God has allowed to come through me. I ask the Lord, who am I to you? Who am I to you? I don't understand. I don't get it. You know, but it's his work. It's my ministry is God's work, just like everything that you all did and the sacrifices you made coming through the journey and the era of time that you did. It was God's work for such a time as the people of this nation now who enjoy the privileges of the sacrifices that you've made. For us to be able to walk free and not see signs that say colored people only, or let's be frank, niggas only. You know, we're gonna keep it real. This is Tribe Family Channel. We don't play. We don't have to. We don't really have to hold our tongue around this house, baby. This is family, and this is how far we have come, and we still have so far to go. When you look at the playing field and the landscape and how they are treating our people today, the covert actions of racism continues, and so it is my job to be right here doing what I do. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., for your sacrifice, for being on Men of Honor. We honor you. You will be in the book forthcoming in September, Men of Honor, from Gumbo for the Soul Publications series. Mrs. Geraldine Hollis will be in the book, Women of Honor, from the Gumbo for the Soul series. This information is available at GumboForTheSoulInternational.com. So I'm thankful and grateful to announce right here on this show that both of you will be honored in these
forthcoming publications. For anyone listening who would like to take place, please visit our website, GumboForTheSoulInternational.com. Also, I am inviting you to join me in my literacy initiative, Gumbo for the Soul and Geniuses Common Literacy Initiative. And I will be presenting you both with more information later. So thank you once again for this historical show, for your reflections, for your remembrances of those that stood with you, that fought with you, and thank you for the continued fight by lending your voices and your presence. It is a gift to all of us. Now, I want to ask each of you for your final thoughts and reflections. If you were passing the baton to the next generation, you're holding the baton in your hand, you're looking in the eyes of the next generation, you're handing it off, what are you saying? Mrs. Geraldine Hollis.
Thank you. I tell you, I had a little note here, and in 58 years, we have come a long way. But the journey has evolved. There has been some crooks and turns, but the need is still there. What we have done has not changed everything, but it has made a difference. On some of our shows, we would tell you all of the things that has really been happening since 1961, even with the Tulu 9 involvement. The kinds of things that we have had to go through, the things that we have been challenged to do, the things that we have seen happen, and so much more. I have become a stronger person. What I read to you in the beginning, having patience, because for so many years, I had a block. I could not tell anyone about my activities. And I felt all of that. I didn't feel free to talk about the things that I had done to make a difference. And it actually took me till I retired from my occupation to be able to look at what I had been blessed to do. And even during that time, I did not see anything that let others know about what we had done. The information was not open, but I'm so thankful that when we were able to go into the Mississippi Department of Archives and History and look at some of the things that had been done, and everyone really should see some of those things, and you will know that what we are talking about now is just, it's the snow on top of the mountain. There was so much going on underneath there that made the situation what it was. But through it all, we have made a difference, and we know that we've made a difference. And right now, we can see that the doors and the minds and the hearts are being opened up. And I would like to really address that at another time and invite all of our listeners and friends and family to come on and see what has happened since those 58 years in some details. And I don't want to take away from Joseph's part, but we know that there has been a change. But that change started not just those 58 years ago. What has happened is coming back again, and you can see it. And we have to be vigilant and determined not to go back where we've come from. And it's going to take all of us to be able to do that. And it's going to take support and encouragement and education and dedication. And I thank you, Beverly, Miss Beverly Black Johnson. I thank you so much for the years and the time that we have spent together. on this journey of enlightenment. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Queen. It is my honor. I'm so humbled and thankful. My spirit is overflowing, and I cannot thank you enough. So thank you so very much, Queen. Mr. Joseph Jackson, you're handing that torch to the next generation. What are you telling them?
I am passing the torch to the next generation to continue in the struggle for justice and equality of all people. In other words, this baton that I'm passing on to you is about not thinking only of yourself, but thinking of others. Because when you think about others and their plight, especially the masses of our black people, you may be doing well in your home, in your profession. You may be really enjoying a great income. But always remember that you're not here on this earth really just to serve yourself. Your purpose is to reach down and bring others up. Just like others sacrificed during the movement and finally passed the torch onto me and Mrs. Hollis and the other Tougaloo members. So set the example of righteousness. Be vigilant. And always, always reflect back on your history with regards to where you have come, because it provides you with the opportunity to create a better future, not only for yourself, but for those who may not have the opportunity that you have been blessed to have.
Wow.
Wow. Amen.
Yes.
Amen. Now, I want to remind everyone that's listening that Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. and Mrs. Geraldine Hollis are the host, Voices of Wisdom. Voices of Wisdom is named so to keep the voice of Rachel Berry alive through our platform. She created the group Voices of Wisdom because everyone knows something that someone else needs to know, officially known as the Vow Network on Facebook. And on Voices of Wisdom for the 10th season, this August 1st, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis and Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. will be speaking to the founder of the Emmett Till Legacy, cousin of Till, Mrs. Deborah Watts. That is going to be August 1st for the season 10 opening of Voices of Wisdom, where we will be honoring Emmett Till. Emmett Till went home August 28th. Rest in peace, Emmett Till, and thank you for everyone that has made it possible for us to be where we are, to do what we're doing, and for the sacrifices that have been made so that we do not have to go through the suffrage that you have gone through and those before you have gone through. You have truly paved the way for a brighter tomorrow for us today. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Mrs. Geraldine Hollis, Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr., all of the Tougaloo 9 members, Mr. Medgar Evers, and the Foot Soldiers, and all that have made a difference, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and even Mrs. Rosa Parks, all of our civil rights leaders and icons, which include the Tougaloo Nine. We will never let your voices go silent. So thank you so much for spending this evening with us on this historic anniversary of the Tougaloo Nine historic read-in, I should say. I say sit-in, read-in, walk-in, walk-in, however you want to put it, but they weren't settling, all right? So I thank you again. God bless you and keep you, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
It is my honor. Now, if you will please hold, we are going to close the show with God Bless America by the singing group Enchantment.
Yes, this is America, my home, sweet home. God bless America.
God bless America. It's the
Everybody's